All I have to say, Walsh, welcome aboard the Teddy train.
Choo-choo, dude. Choo-choo!
Here we go. We're leaving the station. You guys better fucking get on now. We don't take late arrivals.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, where men of fantasy genius have realized, hey guys, we don't need real football skills to dominate on the fantasy field. Yeah! So slap on your pads and grab your helmet. Shit's about to get real.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Let's Talk Fantasy Football. My name is Nick Walsh, and I am here with fearless leader Nick Schreck. Schreck, how are we doing, man?
We're living the dream, Walsh. We're here talking fantasy football. I'm here with you. You're having some coffee, and we're ready to rock and roll as we talk some more NFC South. I don't think it gets better.
No, it really doesn't. We're going to talk about two very interesting teams. I'm going to drink my coffee afterwards. I'm going to watch some golf on TV. It's shaping up to be a great day. So we are living the dream. And we're going to keep doing it. Let's jump into it. So this is part two of the NFC South. We're going to talk about the Panthers and the Saints. If you missed part one, make sure you go back and check that out, where we go into the Bucks, the new look, Tampa Bay Bucks, and the Atlanta Falcons. And if you did miss any of the other division previews, this is our fourth division. We've been cruising through these. So make sure to go back on your podcast feed and check those out as well. But Schreck, lots of changes here for the Panthers. Ron Rivera out, Matt Rhule in, as well as new coordinators, Joe Brady on the offensive side and Phil Snow on the defensive side. And maybe bigger than anything else here, your boy, Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy. Getting the starting nod here, getting the big contract. And Teddy is going to be the number one quarterback for the Carolina Panthers this year. So what do you think about the changes overall? And then what do you think about Teddy and his fantasy prospects this year?
I'm excited about where I think it takes the Panthers for the future. There's some fantasy value here in 2020. I think it's more building for the future. Super excited about offensive coordinator Brady there. He obviously comes from LSU, where that offense was fire, as the kids say. And I think it gives them an opportunity to get into some shootouts, and they're going to need it, particularly with a bad defense. But I think it gives them an opportunity for some fun. And I don't want to be this guy, but this is the talent I saw in my boy Teddy years ago when I was cheering him on. So I'm just happy to see him get a second shot, as I think most are after that gruesome injury. I think the biggest thing to look at, whilst we had a small sample size with him with the Saints, right? 5 starts, he went undefeated, which is great, but he went 9 touchdowns to 2 picks, 69% completion rate, great number.
Nice.
And he was the 13th quickest passer among 37 qualifiers in Pro Football Focus's time to throw. So I think that does a lot for him. His passer rating jumped when he released the ball in 2.5 seconds or less. So I think you're going to look at a lot of short, quick things here in this offense, which is going to be big for Teddy, going to be big for the Panthers. But most importantly, Walsh, is the schedule. And I think this is something that you probably have seen or at least looked at here for streaming options. He gets a great start to the season. He gets the Raiders week 1, Cardinals week 4, and he gets week 5 against the Falcons in the Dome when they give up a ton of points. So a lot of opportunities for Teddy to show off early.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all hyped up on Teddy this year. I think QB25 is egregiously low for him. I think he's a guy who – you should actively be targeting in the late rounds of your drafts if you are waiting, like we tend to do. And there's a lot of different reasons for it. You know, I think that there's definitely holes that you can poke in it, right? Teddy
no
got
question.
5 games last year with the Saints. He looked great, but also great team around him, you know, that whole sort of thing. And you know, new team, new offense, not really that new of an offense for him. He played with, like, Joe Brady was an offensive assistant for the Saints in 2018 when Teddy was there. So he knows some things, but new team, new offense, new skill position players, that whole sort of thing. So obviously concerns there in this abbreviated offseason. That being said, you mentioned, the quick release. He's got the skill, like Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, and Curtis Samuel. Like, just get the ball in their hands, you know? Like, we're not looking at guys who, you need to be, like, waiting back and waiting for them to run elaborate routes or whatever. These are guys who are playmakers with the ball in their hands. So that's a plus as right off the bat. You know, the Joe Brady offense is really meant at getting mismatches for receivers and getting guys in positions where they can make plays. That all seems to make a ton of sense to me. You know, you bring in Robbie Anderson as well, who's a great deep threat, a guy who can stretch the field. Teddy, while he doesn't like throwing the ball deep, he has been pretty good at it when he's done it before. So, you know, that's an option as well. And then I think also what that does is allows Curtis Samuel to not necessarily just be that clear out receiver, to still have that in his wheelhouse, but not just be that clear out receiver. And to get back to doing some of the more short yardage type of things as well. So yeah, Teddy, I'm targeting actively. And I think you're right. This team, I think they're exciting for fantasy in some ways this year, but I also think just this coaching staff that they're putting together and the way that they like did their offseason and their draft, I think this is a team that like can be good within the next couple of years.
Yep. Yep. All I have to say, Walsh, welcome aboard the Teddy train.
Choo-choo, dude. Let's
choo-choo. Here we go. We're leaving the station. You guys better fucking get on now. We don't take late arrivals. We don't take late arrivals here. But yeah, no, I'm excited. It's nice to talk Teddy Bridgewater, my boy.
Yeah, it's so I guess if we want to move on to running back here, I mean, Christian McCaffrey, it's you don't have to say too much about him. He had the second best fantasy season of all time behind 06 LaDainian Tomlinson. He's running back one. I don't think we should expect that again, but we should expect running back one.
Correct. He's my slam dunk number one guy. He outscored last year's overall number, running back number two, Dalvin Cook, by 8.7 PPR points per game. I don't expect a full repeat because that's just crazy, but he is still my slam dunk number one.
Yeah, for sure. And then, so let's move right on to the wide receivers and the other pass catching targets. You know, I touched on them a little bit with DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, and the newly arrived Robbie Anderson. And just for some perspective here, DJ Moore is currently going wide receiver 14, Robbie Anderson wide receiver 61, and Curtis Samuel wide receiver 66. So pretty big discrepancy in the pricing points for DJ Moore relative to the other two. But what do you project here this year? Do you like more at that price, or, and do you think the other two can outperform those low ADPs?
I think DJ Moore is probably the surest of the three, and I think he's a surefire 1-2 border. So would you say he was 14?
Yeah.
So I think he's priced perfectly right, especially with what we expect out of Teddy Bridgewater. So I love the price. He's got a shorter average depth of target. His after-the-catch-driven game makes him a natural fit, I think, with what's going to go on in this offense. Love DJ Moore, love the price, think he's a good fit. I have no problem there. Robbie, the laundromat love machine Anderson, I think is going to have a little bit more of an issue. I think he's more of a misfit for what Bridgewater historically likes to do. He's a higher average depth of target guy. He averaged 15 yards per catch over the past 3 years. I think he becomes more of a complementary option here rather than the stretch the field, super dangerous option consistently. Well, as consistent as you'd be with the Jets.
Yeah, that seems fair to me. You know, Anderson is a guy who I think will have his spike weeks, but they'll be spike weeks. Like, I don't think it's going to be, you know, Don's consistent loving production or whatever. So I think you're pretty much dead on with that. I'm interested in Samuel because Curtis Samuel basically was, and I talked about it before, but he was like a clear out. He was a deep threat guy last year. I think Robbie Anderson moves into that role. And also Samuel, like he was really frustrating last year because if you looked at like indicators, like air yards or that sort of thing, you were like, okay, Curtis Samuel is going to, at some point, like he's going to have this big game. And it basically never happened. But Kyle Allen was also the worst deep ball quarterback in the NFL by like a wide margin. Only about 25% of his targets on deep balls were catchable or were catchable by PFF. So just absolutely fucking terrible. Curtis Samuel, I think goes back into a role where he gets some more intermediate and some more short stuff, but he also can be used in that deep way. We got Teddy in here. Samuel's, I said it last year and it didn't work, but Samuel's a guy that I'm targeting again. I'm doubling down on Curtis Samuel.
And I'm totally cool with the double down, Walsh. I'm here. I'm on board with you, right? At pick 4 in the 15th round, I mean, obviously it's a slam dunk, but I like him obviously a million times more than Robbie Anderson. And he has the upside, right? Like, if he blows off, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, and it costs you anything. But I don't think it's unrealistic for him to be a consistent wide receiver three in this offense if all the pieces fall correctly. So I'm with you.
Fair enough. You know, the other guys that they have there, Seth Roberts and Farrell Cooper, I don't think we really need to talk too much about them. So let's move right to the tight end position, where more big changes. Greg Olsen, the stalwart for them for so many years, is no longer there. And we have Ian Thomas, who is a third-year tight end who has shown flashes before. He's never really put it all together, but he's shown flashes. Now he's going undrafted, so again, price is currently free. Do you have any sort of opinion on Ian Thomas this year?
I think he's not someone that I'm going to look to draft, at least at this point in time. I think it's someone I'm going to watch because I think he checks the boxes of a potential – and I use the word breakout, but I don't expect him to end up as like tight end number one or two. But I think he checks the box from going undrafted to being very fantasy relevant. He's part of an up-tempo offense that's going to lean on the pass. He's had that spot, the spotty play, but he's shown the flashes, as you kind of talked about. If you extrapolate his stat lines, which is always dangerous, right, because we're cherry-picking, but he comes in at 728 yards and 6 touchdowns over Greg Olsen's last 8 games missed. So we're obviously cherry-picking here and making that work, but I think he's going to run a bunch of routes that plays to Teddy Bridgewater's strengths versus looking for a downfield option. So not someone I'm targeting at this point in drafts, but I think someone you need to watch and think about.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, if we expect Teddy to support potentially 3 wide receivers or 2.5 wide receivers, depending on what you think Robbie Anderson's production is going to do.
Sure.
And then also support Christian McCaffrey, who's guaranteed 100 targets plus. A year, it's hard to be like, oh, well, Ian Thomas is going to get enough targets to sustain fantasy production. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, this is going to be an interesting offense, and the defense is going to be terrible, as we talked about. So, they're going to be playing from behind a lot, you would think. And I, like, throwing the ball 650 times seems like a minimum to me. So, I always talk about a tight end. If I can get 6 targets a game out of the tight end, then that is a guy that I am comfortable playing in fantasy for the most part. So I think I'm right there with you where I'm not actively drafting him. But if Ian Thomas comes out with, 13 targets in the first 2 weeks and has a good matchup in week 3, fuck yeah, like I'm picking him up. it's pretty straightforward from there. So we'll see what happens, but cautiously optimistic, I think, for both of us.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Again, a lot of excitement in the division and higher on the Panthers as a whole than I thought it would be when I really sat down and went into the numbers on the team.
Yeah, definitely. They're a sneaky one this year. But let's move on from the Panthers and go to the reigning division champions, the New Orleans Saints. Not a ton of changes, really, for the Saints. We just talked about how many changes the Panthers had, and we didn't even bring up the fact that we said their defense was going to be bad, but we didn't even bring up the fact that they basically lost like 7 starters on the defense. So
we just said that.
Yeah, exactly. But the Saints, I've been going through with each team and tracking sort of their additions and their losses and that sort of thing. And the Saints, there's really not a ton, man. Like they lost Teddy Bridgewater on the offensive side and Ted Ginn. That's like about it. This is more or less the same team that went 13-3 last year and won the division with a point differential over a positive 100 points. The past 2 years in the playoffs, they've kind of gotten unlucky or gotten screwed, depending on how big a Saints fan you are. So this is a team that I think has really a ton of potential to win the Super Bowl. I bet the most money that I've put on any bet this offseason so far is I put $100 on the Saints at 10-1. So
okay,
we'll see what happens. But this is basically the same team that has been a great team for the past couple of years in an offseason where you're really looking at consistency and lack of change and continuation as something that can be a huge benefit. Let's talk about the quarterback position. Drew Brees is still there. This is – oh, God, I'm so stupid. I, like, fucked up my formatting on the notes for this, but whatever. Drew Brees is still there. He is quarterback 8 off the board in the 7th round. I think that makes like complete sense to me.
Yeah, no argument. He's a top 10 QB, bottom end. You know what you get.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, interesting. And then obviously at the quarterback position, Jameis Winston is the new backup. We mentioned it in the past episode. He was quarterback 5, so it's weird that the better fantasy quarterback is now the backup this year. But you know, if Breeze does go down, does Jameis become a guy that's like an auto pickup for you?
Jesus, I wasn't prepared for this question at all, and it makes me sick to my stomach to have to think about this live on air. Yeah, I mean, we watched him despite throwing a ton of picks and everything else, like how does he not instantly become part of that conversation, right, if Drew Brees goes down? We watched him do it last year with the Bucks. He has Michael Thomas. You've got Alvin Kamara. Like, you know, and we'll talk about Sanders and Smith and even Jared Cook. Like, the tools are there. I think he immediately becomes part of that conversation.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if he does get on the field this year, because the Saints offense is like absolutely not what Jameis does. Like, Jameis likes to push the ball down the field, and the Saints offense is based on you know, short passes for the most part, with Thomas and Kamara being their top 2 targets every year. So it'll be interesting to see if he does get on the field. I called it like back in like the second he got signed, I was like, he's going to Nick Foles himself, where Breeze gets hurt and then Jameis leads him to a Super Bowl win. But you know, that's more just me like kind of loving Jameis and hoping that happens than anything else. But anyway, interesting quarterback room. Taysom Hill is there. We saw him like kind of really get a lot more usage towards the end of the year and in the playoffs last year. Do you have like any, I mean, like, I don't know how to factor in like the Taysom Hill factor into fantasy at all.
I don't think you can. Because, you know, especially for what we're talking season long, like, it's not best ball. It's not, like, to expect any kind of consistency, I think, is you can't. I mean, I know ESPN put out that he's been granted tight end flex eligibility for them. So he no longer is eligible at the QB position for them. So, which they reserve the right to change, of course. But I just think we don't have a basis of consistency. So I think for fantasy, unfortunately, it's cool. But nothing we can tangibly go after.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. All right, let's move right on to the running backs then, where we do need to talk about Alvin Kamara, currently going as the 4th running back off the board. You know, he was running back 8 in PPR last year in points per game, and it was clearly a down year for him. So how do you expect him to rebound this year, or what are your expectations for him?
You know, again, he had a down year. He dealt with the injuries to the knee and ankle that led him to play in 14 games, only start in 9, finished with 797 rushing yards, 5 TDs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, since he's entered in the league in 2017, he's finished 4th, 16th. Hold on. That doesn't sound right. Regardless, I think I have that from a different
16th is probably like the overall, as opposed to I was.
Okay. First is running back. Oh, okay. That's why. Yeah. It was 16th overall. Yeah. But either way, I expect a healthy, he's going to bounce back. Again, I think we saw Latavius Murray do what he did there based on obviously opportunity and compliment, but with Alvin Kamara hurt, we saw him seize that opportunity. Kamara bounces back. I have no problem with his ADP. I'm not worried about him.
Yeah. I would say about the same. You know, it's just tough in a year where he has so many lower body injuries. He was very he was down in you know, pass game efficiency, which is where he's really made his hay in the past couple of years. He averaged 5.2 adjusted yards per attempt on catches in 2019, whereas this was 7.1 in 2018. So pretty significant decrease there. And then also Kamara, like, one of the reasons that we've liked him so much is he scores more touchdowns than expected. In the first 2 years of his career, that was absolutely the case. And then last year, he only had 5 touchdowns, so it was lower than expected. If you look at OTD, which is Mike Clay's statistic, trying to predict basically how many touchdowns a guy should have based on average talent, based on where on the field and how often they are getting their touches. So just sort of predicts off touchdown viability. It was the first year that Alvin Kamara had less touchdowns than his OTD. So he got a little bit unlucky in that case. He's a guy who we expect to, with his talent, just to get in the end zone naturally more than the average player. So, you know, if Kamara doesn't get back up to double-digit touchdowns this year, I will be very, very surprised.
Regression's real, baby.
There we go. You talked about Latavius a little bit. You know, he's currently going as running back 44 in the ninth round. In those games where Kamara was hurt, like, he was great, but it's really going to take a Kamara injury, I think, for this to be a thing. Do you have differing opinions on Latavius?
No, I mean, I don't even – yeah, I agree. I don't even like the draft price, but I agree. Short of him being injured or us knowing him injured, I'm not interested in Latavius.
All right, that sounds about right to me. And then they did bring in Ty Montgomery as well. You know, I don't really think there's much meat on that bone at this point. Again, unless Kamara gets injured, in which case maybe you see him used in the pass game a little bit more.
Yeah, we have a big conversation to be had if something goes on with Kamara, which we'll obviously address. But if that happens, big change here for the fantasy.
Fair enough. Let's move to wide receiver, where, you know, Michael Thomas is the wide receiver one off the board, fourth overall. The motherfucker had 186 targets last year, and he was wide receiver one overall by almost 100 fantasy points in PPR. Do you have anything, like, any wild, like, opinions on Michael Thomas that we need to know about?
No. I wish I even had something snarky or smart-ass to say, but I don't. Guy's legit. That's it. I got nothing.
Yeah, I know. At the beginning of last year, I was, like, on the train of, like, oh, his catch rate has to regress. Like, it can't be as high as it was.
I mean, such career highs.
Yeah, and this is like, you know, we talk about with Tyreek Hill and even with the Kamara touchdowns up until last year, it's one of those things where, like, if a guy does it in 1 year, like, it's okay to be like, okay, well, this is probably going to regress. But, like, when he's doing it for multiple years straight, we need to move the baseline of regression, and I have moved the baseline of regression for Michael Thomas.
He's the exception to all the rules that we preach.
Exactly. The interesting addition, though, in this offense is Emmanuel Sanders, who, you know, unclear really how he's going to be used. You know, Ted Ginn is gone. He was sort of the clear-out guy. Sanders isn't really a clear-out guy, but, you know, Ted Ginn only got 3.7 targets per game last year. I'm kind of, like, I don't really know what to make of Manny at wide receiver 40. What's your take on him?
I'm just pulling up the calculator to see where who he's going around. He's going around Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Mecole Hardman, CeeDee Lamb. That's pretty much the rough draft spot for him right now. I had a tough time with this, Walsh, so I won't lie, because I looked at – I'm not even looking at Ted Ginn's, you know, whatever. He had 3.7 targets per game. Like, forgetting about, like, does he take the full three? Does he get more, whatever? I think I kind of settled on – like a wide receiver 3 flex, I think, is where he's probably going to end up. I don't know that I'll have a ton of consistency or confidence week to week. I think I'll depend on matchups more if I own Emmanuel Sanders. But I think that's probably where he falls for me, is wide receiver 3 flex appeal depending.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have trouble really pinpointing, like you said, like depending on matchups or whatever. But like I think unless, like, it's an expected shootout, I'm going to have a tough time really playing Emmanuel Sanders with any sort of confidence, just because Michael Thomas does eat so many of the targets in the offense, and Alvin Kamara, if he's fully healthy, is also going to eat 100 targets. So
And Jared Cook.
Jared Cook's there, and, you know, like, Jared Cook didn't even have, like, a crazy amount of targets last year, and he's not going to lose them. You know, like, it's – we'll talk about it when we get to him, but, like, he's, like – I just don't understand where the targets are really going to come from unless, like, we have to take them from somewhere. And I just don't see where they're going to come from. So, yeah, projected shootouts, sure, let's play Manny. But he's going to be hard to play every single week, I think.
Okay, cool.
Within the rest of that offense, we've got Traquan Smith, Austin Carr, Tommy Lee Lewis, Lil Jordan Humphrey, who I – only added because his first name is Lil Jordan, and I wanted to say that on the podcast. But, you know, if we're not confident in Emmanuel Sanders, I don't think we need to talk about any of those guys too much. So let's move right to Jared Cook. As you mentioned, tight end 11, going in the 10th round. What's your take on Cook this year?
I love when you do this, Walsh. he had a career high 9 touchdowns last year, which, again, as we know, touchdowns are one of the least predictable things we can kind of pull out of this. The targets and receptions, like you said, I don't think they changed, right? He was 43 receptions. Was it 65 targets, what I have here? So 16.4 yards per catch, which was also a career high. I think we saw the ceiling of Jared Cook. I think he has to come back down to earth a little bit. I don't think he finishes back at tight end 6, which I think is what's being reflected in his ADP. You know, as we were talking about some of these mid-round guys going, you know, we were talking Gronk before. Like, I will draft Jared Cook is basically where I'm at.
Yeah, I don't intend on targeting him either. You know, I mentioned with Hayden Hurst in the last podcast that, like, I'm looking for – or, sorry, maybe I mentioned it with Thomas. I forget which guy, but – like,
either way,
I look for 6 targets a game, basically, at tight end. That's like my benchmark. And Jared Cook got 4.6 targets a game last year. So, like, on an offense like the Saints, you're going to have increased efficiency just because it's a good offense. Sure. So I don't think we should expect Jared Cook to, you know, regress, like, terribly, because, again, the baseline of regression for the Saints is higher than most teams. But he's going to need to be really, really efficient in order to – be a starter for you when he's only getting 4.5 targets a game. And again, if we expect Manny Sanders to get more than 4 targets a game, those have to come from somewhere. Where are they coming from? You know, maybe Jared Cook doesn't even get as many looks this year. He was the clear second or third option on that team last year, depending on the health of Kamara. You know,
he still had career highs.
Yeah, and like, is he still the second or third option here, or is he the fourth option with a healthy Kamara and Emmanuel Sanders on the team? It makes it very hard to be confident in him.
Yeah, no, you're right. And even if he remains that second/third option, it doesn't really matter because we're assuming health for Kamara. So assuming full health, again, something's got to give. I agree 100%.
Yes, so be cautious with Jared Cook. They did draft Adam Trautman, third-round pick out of Dayton. Not going to be interesting this year, but a name to keep in mind for future years when the Jared Cook era is done in New Orleans, I think, because Trautman is a pretty cool prospect. But I think that just about sums it up for the Saints. Do you have anything else on them that we need to go through?
Not on the Saints. I mean, just as a whole, we've hit it before, but, you know, the NFC South, a lot of fantasy points to be had and plenty of fallout if people don't stay healthy. But an exciting division. Again, one that I didn't see fully until I dove into the stats and really looked at where some of these points are going to go this year. So as long as everything stays on track, we're looking forward to a fun 2020, Walsh.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting division, definitely a fun one. You know, we'll see how it all sort of shakes out. I'm hoping the Saints do spectacularly this year.
But, some money there for you with Jameis at helm. Nonetheless.
Yeah, but the Saints are going to win the Super Bowl with Jameis at quarterback. That's the big opinion. But anyway, you know, this has been the NFC South. Next week, we are going to be diving into the AFC South. So keep an eye out for that. You got a lot of interesting changes and that sort of thing in that division as well. So we'll be jumping on in there. And again, if you've missed any of our other division previews, make sure to go back and listen to them. But Shrek, I think that should do us for this week, and so for Let's Talk Fantasy Football, I am Walsh, he is Shrek. Later, podcast.
This has been Let's Talk Fantasy Football. Thanks for listening.